Hello, everybody, and welcome to the SOMTV podcast. My name is Jason Wise. Thank you so much for joining us today. And to you SOMTV subscribers, I am hugging you right now. I love you. You guys keep me able to drink. Today's podcast, I am drinking sake. And the reason is the Sake Master Experience on SOMTV is now streaming, which gets into a very interesting individual's stories. And he drinks three different styles of sake during the process. This man's name is Eduardo Dingler. He is a Mexican-born American who spends most of his time in Japan and has evangelized sake for more than 15 years in the United States. He's very, very passionate, very interesting guy with a great story. I interview him here in a few minutes on this podcast. Before we get to that, I just want to say we have a few new things streaming on SOMTV. We have a new blind tasting sessions with Jane Lopes. Jane Lopes is a fabulously talented sommelier who currently resides in Australia. But she's an American. I spent time with her in Alto Adige when we were filming Psalm 2. She has written a fantastic book that if you don't have, you should get. It's called Vignette, and it is her story with wine, but also, you know, kind of goes through all sorts of different bottles that sort of tells what they are and how to drink them and what to drink. It's really, really one of, it's got to be the year's best wine book. So if you don't have Vignette, you should get it. Jane Lopes Blind Tastes on SOMTV, that's streaming right now. We also have several new films up right now, including Cuban Food Stories, which is a great look at Cuba's kind of rustic food scene. We have Boom Varietal, which takes a look at Malbec and the rise of that. I think there's a whole bunch of food and wine films that are coming, and a lot more coming in the next upcoming weeks. We also have the Master Experience with Sake. So without further ado, Eduardo Dingler and my conversation with him after filming that experience, and boy, are we tired. All right, so I'm sitting here with Eduardo Dingler. Did I say your name right?
That's right, sir.
All right, so he just did our master experience in sake, which is the first SOMTV foray into sake as a beverage. You did our sake 101,
mm-hmm.
and our master experience. How was that? Let me just ask you how that
was. It was breathtaking. I don't know if you've ever driven a Ferrari around the course in Monaco, but that was pretty close to that.
Oh, that's funny.
You were really good. I want to talk about sake because I've drank it, well, for a very long time. It's from being from the Midwest, I didn't have sushi until later in my life. Uh-huh. I think people on the coasts probably have it earlier. I want to say maybe freshman of college, sophomore of college. It was later than I think some of people I know in Los Angeles have had sushi. Totally. And that was my first intro to sake. The reason I bring this up is, what was your first intro to sake as a drink? How old were you?
As a drink, you know, I was pretty mature, like other things in my life. It was probably 23, 24 years old to sake itself as a beverage. Sushi, it was probably 17, 16. So it was pretty late comer too, being born and raised in Mexico.
All right, hold on. Before you say you're where you're from, I think a lot of people, when they see that we've hired somebody or asked somebody to do a master experience, you are not Japanese.
I am not. I am born and raised in Mexico and a very confused parent trip. I mean, my dad's side is Dutch. My mom's side is Italian. Completely mixed up. But born and raised in Mexico, moved to Napa 20 years ago this year. And I just became hooked with sake. And a lot of my friends say I'm more Japanese than my Japanese friends because I spent a lot of time in Japan. I've digested the culture and I am a total sucker for it. I love it.
Okay, so I think it's a very fascinating thing that people, I don't know if people know you from the Morimoto group,
mm-hmm.
but you were the head beverage director for the entire Morimoto group, correct?
Yeah, I've been honored to be the corporate beverage director for Chef Morimoto, opening new properties, not only in the US, but across the world and setting up programs.
Is it strange that chef would hire somebody who's not Japanese? Is that not strange? Is that...
You know, it's a lot of factors coming together, but I am very thankful that Chef chose me and he thought I was the right person to lead his programs. And to educate not only on sake, shochu, Japanese spirits, but only on his food and his culture throughout new restaurants, including Mexico City, Chicago, setting programs for Bangkok and Thailand, and even as far as Doha and Qatar and Dubai in the Middle East. So I was very honored and still are. And I learned a lot from Chef, and he trusted me in a lot of things. And he just saw that, the drive.
What do you see as the American perception. Let's start with just sort of Japanese culture.
Uh-huh.
Because, I mean, when you talk about Japanese culture, you get a wide gamut of understanding. I mean, my thing came from, maybe not so secretly obsessed with Kurosawa. And
absolutely.
From a film standpoint, I love Japanese cinema. I truly think it's some of the greatest movies in the world. And in those films, samurais often, sometimes they get paid in sake or alcohol or rice. Or
keel with sake.
Right.
In some cases.
Oh, definitely.
Absolutely. Oh,
if anybody's injured in a fight, there's always there's always the woman who takes care of said samurai and gives him sake.
Mm.
And that often seems to make him better.
immediately.
Seven Samurai is a great example of that. Or any Toshiro Mifune films, Okay, but anyways, we're off topic. What is the perception of Japanese culture within the United States?
You know what? Lately, over the years, there's always been this kind of light that's been growing bigger and bigger as far as Japan. From, as you mentioned, the film culture to the food culture to everything about it. Lately, whiskey kind of took a big spotlight. So we became enamored. Now, obviously, there's a lot of synergy with the Olympics coming up next year. And I personally have been approached by people, and I'm not kidding you, on a monthly basis, saying, I've never been to Japan, now I'm going. I booked my trip, or I'm about to book it.
Why? Why would they say
people that? Are just enamored with the culture, with everything, all the realm, the gamut from, from the beverage, food, sports, everything about Japan has become a huge thing. And over the years, from me being in Japan, visiting, I've seen this trend. So when I first started going there, not to go too much off topic, but started going there. I would stop at a train station and I would get lost for an hour and thoroughly enjoy it because I wouldn't see nothing in English and I would just gamble where I was going, right? I would get plenty of time.
It's bold.
It's super bold and I enjoy it. It's one of those things being completely out of your comfort zone. But lately, in the last year or so, you go into a train station and there's somebody in a uniform that speaks English perfectly and will guide you to wherever you have to go. And that's all because of the Olympics coming. And that comes with a huge push. Obviously, Japan has been spreading their wings throughout the world and kind of promoting people to visit Japan. And I think it's finally all sinking in where all the stars align.
Yeah.
And people gain this huge curiosity for it to go and just want to go and see it. What is it about?
Well, we'll get to sake in a second here because I think sake is one of the entry points for not just Americans, but anybody who is, probably not even just Westerners.
Mm-hmm.
I think anybody around the world who is outside of Japan, sake would be one of the things that they go, this is one of the first experiences I have with the culture. Sushi, it could be some films, uh-huh. It could be whatever. But I think Japan is a really fascinating culture in that they have never had the stigma of producing low quality goods. They've never had the stigma of not caring about their population, meaning like, they have a tremendous respect given to them. I mean, the cameras we shoot with are either German
mm-hmm.
or Japanese, always.
Yeah.
I mean, they are Sony or Panasonic or Aeroflex, which is German. Yeah. And there's a very strange thing to their culture where their products are top-notch.
Totally.
And they get the world to sort of play by their rules, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you know your history about Japan and America's relationship, aside from World War II, it's always had its issues. You know, I mean,
absolutely.
Perry took a bunch of ships there and really tried to make it look like America is much more important, more powerful than, and really all he did was prolong something that turned into World War II.
Mm-hmm.
But Japan has always been a force to reckon with. It's one of the most populous countries in the world, but yet one of the most forested countries in the world. They seem to be a giant paradox to me.
Absolutely. I mean, something about that to that regard is that Japanese
culture, strange, two non-Japanese people talking about their culture.
Yeah. No, completely.
I'm aware of how ridiculous this is, but it's also, you know, they are selling sake to our market, and so we're
absolutely,
you look at
and
them
they're
from
thriving
the outside
because of it. And you know what? I know I'm not a Japanese native. I have studied it and attempt to curate. I am no master or an expert, but I at the same time I've really deeply gotten into the fabric of Japan. I like to think so from all the times I've visited and just digested the culture and everything about it. And I'm completely enamored by it. So Japan as a culture, they'll grab something and they'll bring it. Take, for example, whiskey, right? Without touching sake yet. So whiskey is brought from Perry, Commodore Perry, and they kind of see this
Commodore
light.
Perry was an American admiral.
Absolutely.
And
this is back 100 years ago, 1800s. Oh, yeah. And he comes in a ship and he says, hey, we want to open relationships with the world. You need to come out of your shell to Japan. And here's whiskey as a gift. So they start looking at it and they're like, wow, this is amazing. We want to produce something like it. It takes them a few decades, if not a century. But once they got there, they perfected this beverage that now it's recognized as amongst one of the best whiskeys in the world. And sorry to say, but it definitely beats Scotland in a lot of different competitions and a popular belief.
That's bold.
That is exactly what they do. They really break down each product, each category, and they take it. And they, like cars, they weren't the first ones to produce cars. It was the U.S., right? You had Ford, you have things like that.
And the Germans.
There you go, Mercedes, all that. Yeah. But once it got to Japan, they really got a way to, like, clockwork, figure out all these things, and yes, make a car that was, like, available for everyone, but, like, work and have precision, and also some high-end stuff, and even race cars these days.
Yeah. I find their products, this is no secret here, but their products from top to bottom are top-notch. So now let's talk about sake as an entry point into Japanese culture and also as a drink itself. I have always been fascinated by it because to me, wine is too easy to say that wine has a lot of layers and that there's very expensive ones and there's very inexpensive ones and they can pair with almost anything if you know how to do it. But sake is so incredibly underrated as a food pairing beverage. And I can say this now knowing what I don't know. I mean, I had no idea when I was first introduced as just all sake was hot.
Uh-huh.
And now I look at sake. Why don't you talk a little bit about the evolution of the drink? And I want to know, what is it like in Japan? Is it like what it is here?
It is very similar. So in Japan, I feel like at some point, the parallels between Japan and the U.S., not to mention the rest of the world, have gone at a different speed. So in Japan, it started as a artisan beverage, as it always has been, and it started evolving, right? So throughout the last millennia, it became slowly to what it's now. But the way it's appreciated over there is very different than the U.S. And in the U.S., we are very keen to find and appreciate the craftsmanship and the culture and everything, the shock that comes with it. So in a way, we recognize the quality, the price level, and everything that goes with it. And being that said, in Japan, there's a lot of respect and followership for regionality. So if you're from Niigata, you're gonna really lay your hat in Niigata and enjoy Niigata sake, regional rice, right? In the US, you tend to appreciate certain brands. Let's do a wine cross-examination, for example. The DRC, right, of wine world. So you're looking at Burgundy.
The most expensive wine in the world.
The most expensive. So then you start comparing parallels to Japan. And there's producers like Nechio Tokoyama out of Niigata that has achieved that level. And their bottles achieved like $4,000 or $5,000 a bottle.
Wait a minute. Hold on.
Yeah,
you're
it's unheard
four
of.
$4,000 or $5,000 bottles of sake.
Absolutely. Which is, 10 years ago, 5 years ago in the U.S., you would never even think about it. But there is.
So someone's taking rice and brewing rice and selling it for $4,000.
Absolutely. And you know what? People line up to pay those prices and line up for the next release.
Does it age?
Oh, yeah. It grazed amazingly. So what this producer has done, he actually, funny enough, fell in love with Burgundy as a youngin when he was about 30 years old, came back to his brewery, took the reign as a president, and started trying to fit what Burgundy would be into a sake brewery. And he started first growing his own rice, controlling the whole production start to finish, vintage sake. So every vintage of his production is the last time I sat down with them, we tried 2012, 13, 14, and 15 side by side of a Junmai Daiginjo Koshitanrei, 100% Koshitanrei rice from Niigata, and tried it side by side. And I can tell you, like, I was flabbergasted at the experience. It really kind of brought it to a next level. And I understood why people, not only in the US, but UK, France, are paying all this amount for his sake. And he's a very humble guy. He only, as very Japanese fashion, only charges for what it goes into it. It's the highest grade of rice. He grows it. Him and his son plant it every year and harvest it every year. And he only produces this many bottles. And that's why it goes for that cost.
Well, it's funny because, like, you know, if you look at, I am not saying any bottle of wine is worth $4,000. But that being said, at least a vine comes back year after year after year. It's the same mm-hmm. one. Whereas rice,
you have to plant every year.
Every year. It's yeah. harvested. It's destroyed
uh-huh.
in the harvest. Yeah. So how in the world do you justify $4,000 for a bottle?
So it's a tiny vineyard, and I went and walked the vineyard. It almost
looks
like—
They call it a vineyard?
A sake field, right? A rice okay. field. Thank you. So we went and walked it, and it looks like a little piece of like Jurassic Park. And it's like—
It's really hilly.
It's hilly. It's a slant, and then you have this mountainous region. The day we were there last, it was like cloudy. You get the really romantic kind of setting. So he has a small rice field that he plants and harvests every year with his son. And he manages to do a true vintage sake, not only from harvest year, but brew year. And it's the same thing. And he puts a stamp on each region, in each like terroir, if you will, vintage.
Right. And so it's like single vineyard.
Absolutely, to the wow. next level. It's something that in Japan is not common. And people don't usually view this far. Usually the breweries will source rice from other fields and different vintages. It doesn't really matter. It could be 3 years ago, and you source it, and you make an amazing sake. But for him, it was like a true statement of that vintage, and in small quantities.
That's amazing. Well, what are we drinking right now?
So this is an amazing sake that we'll learn more about in the masterclass, but it's a Katafune, which is from Takeda Shuzo, also in Niigata, and it's a Daiginjo, highest polishing grade of sake, and it's a... brewer's alcohol added, which creates a little more focus, sharp. The closest way to me in my head to look at this sake, it's like that Instagram filter that's really bright. It like pops okay. up and it's amazing. It jumps out of the glass and not only
it's really good.
A rich experience. Yeah, it has like dried orange peel. It's got like a little bit of anise, a little lemon, crushed minerals.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk forever about this, but I mean, there's no question sake from a complexity standpoint. I don't, you know, I'm not a master sommelier. I'm not any of these things, but I can tell you that I've drank enough stuff to tell you that the complexity in this is outrageous. I mean,
it's incredible
to get that from rice, and to get it from rice that is brewed the same way wine would be fermented. It's pretty astounding. I mean, there's quite a bit going on here.
Yeah, there's the basic ingredients. There's four or five ingredients. That's it. But the actual methods that you achieve to get there. Like, for instance, this producer we're tasting, he ages his sake a little longer at a very low temperature. When we walked into his cellar, and this is his secret weapon, walked in there, it's like probably 40 degrees Fahrenheit. You need a scarf to walk in there in the middle of summer.
Wow.
And he ages his sake in this large 18-liter kind of demijohns or bonbons that you would find in, like, southern France to age it for 3, 6, 9 months at a time. So it concentrates the flavors and explodes the aromas.
Right, right, right.
Pretty unique.
Oh, it's amazing. So as a Mexican-born American now who represents and sells sake, a Japanese product, have you ever found any stigma to you in Japan? I mean, has anybody looked at you and gone, well, why are you?
You know what?
What
it's
makes
been
you qualified?
Quite the opposite. And you would think so, right? You would think out of a culture that's really proud of what they do and really close. And in my experience, it's been quite the opposite.
I'm obsessed with the culture. I don't mean to say anything negative. I just mean—
No. I know exactly what you mean. And I'm aware of those connotations. But in my own experience, I've walked the streets of rural towns and the older people will stop and bow just because they see somebody that's not local and they want to pay respect. And everywhere I go throughout Japan, and that's why I guess love to, I mean, the city of Tokyo, it's very Manhattan-like. Like everybody's on a time crunch, everybody's running kind of like on the direction and nobody even makes eye contact, right? But when you get into the outskirts, Toshigi, Kyushu Island, Niigata, all those places, it's very welcoming. People actually appreciate you being there and for any reason you are. One of my first experiences in Japan was getting in a cab and the cab driver, and this might've been my first experience ever, the cab driver did not speak a lick of English. I did not speak a lick of Japanese. I could understand one or two things. But guess what? I showed him the address I was going to, the hotel, and the whole ride we were there, we didn't stop talking once. And all we talked about was sake terms and prefectures. And you know what? That taxi driver, which is very uncommon, because they have these white gloves and a hat, they're all very dressed up, he got out of the cab and gave me a hug on the way out.
Wow.
And it was the most, I mean, that really set the huge, huge standard for me. And it was amazing. And we just connected via sake terms. He could not understand how somebody that was foreign and quite young for their realm, he was like 60, 70, would know and understand and be excited about sake.
You know, passion is absolutely, people always say like laughter's the universal language, or passion is.
Oh, yeah.
And when somebody sees somebody who's excited about something and cares, I've seen this with my own eyes many times around the world when we're filming. When we're excited about something, some people there are so happy to see somebody care, whether it's spec we're filming in Northern Italy, or people are just so happy that you appreciate what they're working so hard to make and create. And a place like Japan, where they're so proud of what they do, absolutely, that's astounding.
Yeah.
I want to wrap this up because, you know, you have a flight to catch. I don't want you to miss your flight. Which? But what, so the most expensive bottle you've tried is probably $4,000, right? I mean, that's...
Yeah. I mean, some are just simply priceless. You can't put a tag on it because it was something out of somebody's cellar, a brewer's cellar. I mean, I could only imagine it going to somebody in Burgundy or Bordeaux and trying something dusty out of that. But yeah, I would certainly say $3,000-$5,000.
That's insanity. So what's the oldest sake you've ever had and that was drinkable and actually was good?
Oh, I could tell you right now. It's a 1972 Daiginjo Koshu. Koshu meaning aged sake on purpose. Minimum 3 years aging. And it was in 1972. And I could only compare it to the best cognac from like...
Wow.
I mean, the best cognac you could ever have. It's like nutty, layered, rich, amazing. I mean, I enjoyed it on its own, but I could have grabbed either a plate of cheeses or a cigar or just a beautiful setting. And it was incredible. I'll never forget it.
Wow. I mean, what happened? Well, we talk a little bit about this in the Sake 101, and we talk about it in the Master Experience. So I we'll leave some of that. But what are some strange foods people wouldn't think would pair with sake?
Oh, my God. I mean, you could go into different cultures, right? So we talk about briefly about Indian food, about Mexican food, Italian food, and then across off. Like lately, the craziest thing I've ever tasted with sake was a few months ago in Tokyo proper, and it's a place called Firenze Sake. And they did sort of like a layered between sardines. There was a little bit of cheese and jelly.
Are these like oil and pickled sardines?
Yeah, or
are these
no, like, it was like pretty fresh
sardines.
Or just
like fresh sardines, okay.
Yeah, with like a jelly and a little bit of cheese. And it was like a layer. I mean, I wouldn't call it a sandwich, but it was something like a layer like that with the little cream around it.
You got a lot of flavors to compete
with. Oh, I mean, right talk there. About bold. Yeah. I mean, you cannot...
But sake was the beverage of choice.
And there was a sake that was just incredible with it. It was a Kimoto, longer fermentation, richer style from Fukui Prefecture. And it was just like they made love together. It was incredible.
Is sake like wine in that you can pair most foods with it, do you think?
I would certainly say so.
What about pizza?
Oh, pizza? Oh, you call it. Any Yamahai, any Honjozo, Junmai, you're probably very clear with a pizza margarita or like a pepperoni pizza. It's the umami-driven factors of a pizza with a tomato, San Marzano tomatoes and all this thing. It's like an ideal pairing for sake.
That's fantastic. What about like in wine, some things that are really hard to pair with are eggs.
Asparagus, eggs.
Or eggs, asparagus.
Yeah.
What about those two things?
You know what? That's one of the entry venues that Michelin places in like Spain and even the US have seen an entry for sake, because you could safely say on the wine world, maybe I'll pair an Alsatian Pinot Blanc, right? But for sake, you have a wide range. You have a layer of Junmai Ginjos or Ginjos that are perfect, especially like Toshigi Prefecture, which has this herbal-toned qualities. We'll go with artichokes, asparagus, eggs, things that don't usually pair with wine. And they're like really just bond beautifully.
This is great, man. It's so fascinating to talk to you. I can't wait for people to hear the... Well, the Sake 101 is excellent, and your Master Experience is excellent. So,
it was quite
a treat. So the Master Experience is up today, and the Sake 101 is up next week. Awesome. So I am, it's truly an honor to do this with you, man. It's great. And that's the very beginning of what will be quite a bit of sake content coming to Som TV. So cheers.
I am thrilled and excited. Cheers to you guys.
You're a good man.
Thank you so much.
I hope you catch your flight.
I know. Hey, that's the least of my worries. This was amazing. Thank you so much.
Good stuff. Thanks, Eduardo. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Really appreciate it. Please go to SomTV.com. Remember, we're in our charter period right now, so we want to know what you're thinking about SomTV. Obviously, we have an enormous amount of content coming, most of which I'm not allowed to tell you about. Feature films, new series, all sorts of licensed content. We are about to explode as far as that stuff goes in the coming months. But those of you who've been with us from the beginning, we love you. Okay, until next time, please, everybody, be safe.